Federal Drive. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Good morning. My guest today is an old friend of mine, David Dowd. David is a partner at the law firm of Mayer Brown LLP. By way of introduction, David and I worked together for about 4 years while I was at Mayer Brown. And today we're going to talk about bid protests. We're going to touch a little bit on the recent decision involving Google and the Department of Interior. And hopefully a little bit at the end, just touch on everybody's favorite topic, organizational conflicts of interest. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Roger, and thanks for having me.
Bid protests are always a great topic to discuss. It's part of the business that we're in government contracts, and there's always something interesting going on. In particular, right now, everybody's talking about the Google decision. I know you've had a chance to read it. What are your thoughts about it?
Sure. First off, let me say that my firm represents Google, so I wanted to make that disclosure.
They don't represent in this protest?
Not in this case.
Okay.
I just wanted to throw that out there. The short of it is, in the Google case, the Court of Federal Claims preliminarily enjoined the Department of the Interior from proceeding with the procurement of a particular Microsoft product, messaging solution, pending further investigation, if you will, by the Department of the Interior about potential alternative sources for the same kind of product, specifically Google. What the court did that I think is pretty interesting for the procurement community there was to look at the Department of the Interior's approach to determining its requirements for the messaging solution. The particular activities at issue were an RFQ as well as a proposed modification to a Dell contract. And the court preliminarily enjoined the Department of the Interior from proceeding with either one of those pending further investigation into alternative sources. And I think what's interesting then in terms of the procurement community is this is a case where the court is really looking at how the agency figured out what its requirements are. And to some in the community, I think, reached further back in that process than the many are used to seeing. So it really points up the need, I think, for agencies to be very diligent when they're determining what their requirements are, and suggests that, to the extent that they don't do a reasonable job of that, even in advance of an RFP, they may well find themselves faced with a protest.
Well, David, I know standardization, at least I understand it, was one of the issues in the Google case. And I recall from my time when I was in government is that was something that the government would rely on in numerous situations to support, a requirement that was written a particular way, which by its terms would limit competition. Do you think there are lessons for agencies in this decision when it comes to standardization and development requirements?
I think so. I think standardization, when you at least look at the Google decision, it seems to be as if an agency maybe should approach that as if it's the issuance of an RFP. I mean, is market research being done? That's kind of the activity you normally think of closer in time to the issuance of an RFP. You think of standardization typically as being an earlier stage not really part of that market research process that's called out in part six of the FAR. And I think what the Google decision points up is standardization really should be viewed sort of as an activity closer in nature to the issuance of an RFP. I mean, it does have competitive impacts in terms of what you're going to go out and buy. I mean, if a standard decision is made, that in a sense does foreclose various opportunities that might be identified in response to an RFP. So I think the lesson for the agencies is, you know, treat that standardization decision as very much in the nature of issuance of an RFP, because it does have profound competitive impacts.
Yes, and well, and as part of that, I know the Office of Federal Procurement Policy right now is talking about talking to industry in the procurement process, the sort of Mythbusters campaign that OFPP has launched, and they're focusing on improving communication between government and industry during this initial process, especially where you're developing requirements. Do you see this decision as being an impetus for agencies to actually improve that process or to improve communication, or do you see it something where people are going to shut down even more given the risk of protest?
You know, I'm optimistic, I guess, by nature. I view it as an invitation to really improve the process. Certainly the Court of Federal Claims in this decision is encouraging, you know, greater discussion with industry as a means to avoid leaving out one alternative through the course of a standardization decision. I think those exchanges between government and industry can't happen enough in terms of giving some meaningful insight into what the requirements could be. You know, what are the options available to an agency? It's always seemed to me that the earlier the agency is aware of alternatives or possibilities, the better off everyone is. The better off the agency would be in terms of figuring out what they want to buy or what they might be able to buy. It's better off for industry trying to make that decision to, you know, do you bid, do you not bid? Particularly in a larger program, companies will invest a significant amount of money chasing an opportunity. And the earlier those opportunities are surfaced, through an RFP, certainly a draft RFP, that's great. But, you know, even in advance of that, with discussions with industry, you know, the more exchanges you have between industry and the government, I think the better off everyone is. And there has been historically, I think, a fair amount of pervasiveness of, you know, myths about when are those exchanges okay, how far can they go. And I think folks tend to hold back a bit more than maybe is helpful to anyone, you know, on either side. So I think to the extent OFPP can encourage that discussion, that dialogue, I think it would be great.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've always been interested in when I was back at GSA, and I sound like I'm an old guy, which I actually am. You know, one of the things we tried to do was, in fact, improve communication between government and industry, because it pays off for everybody in the end. You get better performance, better understanding, a better meeting of the minds. So it can be a win-win situation. And I see, you know, I agree with you. I see this Google decision as providing an opportunity for positive view of how to improve the process. So we're talking here with David Dowd, and we'll talk a little bit about bid protest in general. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title, the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long, and Aldrich, a name you can trust.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking with David Dowd, partner at Mayer Brown LLP, and we're talking about the Google bid protest decision and bid protest in general. And I'd like to turn to that general topic right now, David. You know, you've been doing this bid protest business for about 20 years. You don't look like you've been doing it that long, but you've been doing it for at least 20 years. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in current trends and what you've seen sort of over your career, just generally? Maybe just sort of big picture. I think, you know, people today are talking a lot about spike in protest and what are the trends in terms of what people are protesting. What are your views on that? What are you seeing?
Sure. I think over the last 4 to 5 years, we certainly have seen an increase in the number of protests. I mean, looking back to fiscal year 2006 or so, there were nearly 1,300 protests filed at GAO. Last fiscal year, 2010, is up to almost 2,300. So it certainly is up over the last 4 or 5 years relative to what it was historically, realizing that, at least in the time I've been practicing, that's down substantially from what the numbers were, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, in terms of materiality, I mean, the number of protests relative to the number of transactions that could be protested, it's a tiny, tiny fraction. So it's not as if every procurement's protested by any stretch. But still, the numbers are up over the last few years. Some part of that is expanded jurisdiction at GAO to hear protests, so that accounts for some of the increase. I think there is a bit more sense in the community that it might be okay to protest. There may be fewer opportunities coming down due to budget crunches, things like that. So we are seeing a little bit of an uptick in the numbers. It's still too early to say, I think, in terms of whether or not that trend will hold. The kind of issues that you know, we see being protested most commonly, organizational conflicts of interest certainly is a hot topic. You see a lot more of those kinds of protests than you saw, you know, 4, 5, 8 years ago. Cost allegations I see, you know, pretty commonly, you know, surfacing. And another topic, and it kind of relates back to, I think, to what we were talking about at the outset is, you know, some of the issues I see, and this is often in post-award protests, in fact, that are arising are areas where there's a lack of common understanding, I think, between the company that ends up protesting and the agency about what the real requirements are. Maybe some uncertainty as to what the requirements are. Maybe still some uncertainty as to what the evaluation criteria really mean, you know, relative to those requirements. And that's an area, I think, that, you know, to harken back to the dialogue that you mentioned earlier between industry and government, you know, maybe that's an area where, you know, as we see more dialogue between industry and government, some of those kinds of protests may fall away. You know, certainly if in the post-award context an issue arises about uncertainty and as to what the requirements really are, that's awfully late in the process for that to show up. I mean, leaving aside whether that's a timely protest ground or not, and it may well be, depending on how the evaluation shakes out, it's just unfortunate for the whole process that there should be that kind of uncertainty or confusion that late in the game.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I did see that seemed to be a trend to me, and you can comment on it, is that, you know, it is about communication. It's in the area of discussions. And it seems like to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there still seems to be the government and industry are sort of struggling still with all the guidance, like, you know, what is effective communication actually during the procurement process, the quote discussions and the negotiations process. Is that what you've seen?
I see discussions as a troubling area on both sides. I think as far as government goes, there's a lot of concern, I would say, on a part of government in terms of what do you discuss? Do you discuss everything? At some point, that becomes too much discussion, if you will, because you lose the forest for the trees. If every potential weakness or concern, even if it's relatively small, is discussed, it's hard for an offeror to figure out what really matters and what doesn't while responding to all of those. On the part of industry, I think there's often some concern that, you know, are the right issues being discussed? Yes, we see that weakness, but are there issues that really do address the ability to win that contract that are not, for whatever reason, being surfaced in discussions because they concern something like the competitiveness of a price? Something that matters a whole lot in the end, but is not necessarily a weakness and not the subject of discussions. So I think the lack of meaningful discussions grounds. Those continue. In fact, those would be, you know, one of the rare set of grounds that I think have held constant, you know, over the 2 decades or so I've been doing this.
And that seems to be to indicate if they've held constant for 2 decades, there's still, I mean, there's clearly an indicator that there's work to be done there to try to.
There's a lot of work to be done there. I think the trend toward awarding without discussions, which maybe in some quarters was viewed as a way to avoid the risk associated with protests arising out of discussions. I mean, certainly that does reduce the prospect of that particular protest ground, I think at the expense of improving the proposals. I mean, I think we have to go back ultimately to the purpose of discussions, and that is to ensure that the government gets the best value, that the proposals that it receives are the best possible proposals. I mean, that's a difference between government procurement versus commercial procurements. In commercial procurements, you don't really have that same concept of having to go to discussions. You have it in the government context, and it's, to me, an improvement. Mm-hmm. It certainly gives the government the chance to improve the proposals it receives. And I think, you know, some more meaningful guidance of that. And we really haven't had much guidance in the FAR. I mean, you think back to the FAR rewrite back in the 90s that talked about discussions. There hasn't been a whole lot since then.
Right. In terms of guidance. And I don't think that rewrite, now we are dating ourselves, David, but I don't think that rewrite really actually changed the dynamic for discussions, frankly, between what negotiated procurement was like, you know, before the rewrite in terms of that discussion process versus the way it is today post rewrite. I just don't see where it really moved the needle all that much.
Yeah, terminology changed, but I think in the end, did discussions get better? Do agencies have better comfort that they're discussing the right topics in the right way? I don't know that agencies do. And I think on the part of industry, does industry get the sense that the government is really raising with them the topics that most matter to that agency about that offer or proposal? I don't know that industry does.
Yeah, and well, you know, another topic of discussion between the agency and an offer or contractor are organizational conflicts of interest. And that's always a complex and difficult area to handle. And DOD just issued their final rule implementing the Weapon System Acquisition Reform Act, Section 207, on organizational conflicts of interest. You have any thoughts on that, just real quickly?
Sure. The proposed rule that was issued back in April was pretty broad in scope. It covered major defense acquisition programs, you know, the kind of topics that Section 207 of WASARA, as it's often called, covered. But the proposed rule went beyond that. It would have introduced a variety of changes applicable to organizational conflicts of interest in all variety of programs, contracts awarded by defense agencies. That part has been scaled back for now and put on hold, I would say deferred until the anticipated rewrite.
Right. And David, we're going to have to defer to the next break to continue this discussion. David Dowd from Mayor Brown LLP, and we're going to talk more about one of our favorite topics, organizational conflicts of interest. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to David Dowd, partner at Mayor Brown LLP, and we're talking this session on organizational conflicts of interest. And David, you had started to discuss the DOD rule on OCIs and WASARA. Go at it.
Sure. Thanks. In the final rule that was issued by DOD on the 29th, I believe it was, of December, DOD scaled back in terms of the amendment to the DFARS from what was proposed in April, in that the only part that's now there is the elements of the proposed rule that concerned WASARA. There was an additional piece in the proposed rule that would have affected organizational conflicts of interest sort of DOD-wide, meaning other than major defense acquisition programs. So that piece has been tabled for now. It is expected to be the subject of an upcoming change, perhaps fairly early this year, to the FAR to address organizational conflicts of interest generally. I will say just briefly on the WASARA piece, the proposed rule and the final rule are very similar in most respects. I think one interesting difference between the proposed and final rules on WASARA is that the proposed rule had an express preference for mitigation as the means of resolving an OCI, sort of start there, if you will, and then proceed to alternative approaches if you can't mitigate. And that stated preference has been eliminated. And I think in terms of for industry and for contracting officers, the elimination of that preference is a little troubling to me. You know, perhaps it'll return in some vestige when the FAR is revised. But the preference for mitigation I thought was helpful in the proposed rule. I think one thing that was missing from the proposed rule, also missing from the final rule, hopefully will be in the FAR, is some more guidance in terms of what kinds of mitigation approaches might work, you know, could make sense. If you view the FAR as a tool that contracting officers are supposed to use and something that contractors can look to in terms of approaching difficult issues, I think some guidance through the FAR or the DFARS, if that's appropriate, in terms of what kinds of mitigation approaches should be used would be very helpful. I think in some respects, and this is down in the weeds, I guess, but when I look at Part 15 of the FAR, in particular in price analysis, and I look at the guidance that's given there in terms of the variety of techniques an agency might use to analyze price, that kind of guidance is very helpful, I think. In the price context, I think something like that would be helpful in terms of OCIs and mitigation.
Yeah, well, David, hey, it's not down in the weeds for me. You know, we are kind of contracting, government contracting, you know, geeks, I guess, so to speak. That's what we do for a living.
Fair enough.
It's all interesting stuff. It seems to me, you know, the issue of mitigation is important because, you know, the thing that I sort of see is all this focus on, you know, preventing organizational conflicts of interest. You know, there's a backdrop here, too. It's, right, the Competition and Contracting Act. And, you know, to me, mitigation is an opportunity to facilitate in a manner that protects all the stakeholders, all the people in the who are in the competition, protect those by mitigating the conflict, but then ensuring that there's a robust competition. There's and not unnecessarily eliminating firms. What do you think of that?
I'd agree. I think the Competition and Contracting Act does encourage certainly more competition, both in terms of number and quality. I think mitigation does facilitate that. Certainly does promote the effort to obtain potentially better qualified or certainly, you know, at least equally qualified contractors to perform that work. It seemed to me that the preference for mitigation was the right approach to take in the proposed rule. I do hope it returns in some form, maybe in the FAR rewrite. I think it's consistent with the purpose of CICA, and I think there's a flavor in the final rule, the preamble to the final rule that DOD issued, that acknowledges the importance of fostering competition. I just think a state of preference for mitigation does that a little better. Mitigation helps, you know, as you're approaching a conflict of interest from the government standpoint, I think you need to figure out, all right, what are we going to do? Mitigation is often fairly difficult to do. It certainly requires administratively a number of steps on the part of government. Knowing, you know, which of the alternatives should I pursue first, mitigation, avoidance, you know, neutralization, knowing which one to start with, I think is just helpful analytically.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And just on another aspect in what we've been talking about today, and that's communication. It seems to me, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, you know, communication in this in the context of organizational conflicts of interest, that's also part of that requirements development when you're trying to talk to industry, if you're the government or industry wants to talk to the government about a procurement. You know, it seems to me that's a key area too, where people, you know, need to I think focus on improving communication.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I guess where we started the show, you know, requirements planning, procurement planning. I think harken back to the acquisition advisory panel report some years ago. I know you're very familiar with that.
And do you know any members of that panel?
A couple, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, requirements definition, procurement planning. You know, the better a procurement is planned, whether we're talking about what the requirements definition is, we're talking about when might an OCI arise, what are we going to do about that OCI should it arise, how might it be mitigated. I mean, these are all parts of a continuum, I would say, where more exchanges between government and industry can be helpful to get a sense of, you know, what do we want, where are we going, how might we get there. All of that improves, ultimately, the products and services that the government buys.
Yeah, so are you, I mean, you may not, I mean, have a view of it, but are you, I'm pretty optimistic about what will be coming out of the FAR Council and the proposed rule OCIs. I know there's been a lot of focus on that. That's sort of the next step. And it seems to me, a couple things sort of struck me about DOD's rules. They moved it back to, essentially, and again, we're talking in the weeds here, I will confess, but they moved it out of Part 3, essentially, where it talked about improper business practices, back to where it really, to me, belongs in Part 509. Of their regulation, that where it deals with responsibility type issues. I think that's a positive thing. I think that's is an indication of potentially good things to come in the FAR rule. And I also think the fact that they actually did scale it back and sort of deferring to the FAR Council, hopefully, it, to me, means that that it's going to be something that folks are going to be able to work with. That's just my gut. I could be completely wrong. I don't know what you think.
Well, I hope you're right there. I would agree. I think the treatment of OCIs, pulling it back, holding it off for what will be a proposed FAR rule, I expect, on OCIs, gives the government basically two shots at this. I mean, they've got the benefit of comments on the proposed DFARS rule. They'll now get the benefit of comments on the proposed FAR rule. And I think we will, in the end, see a better approach to OCIs, which will be for the benefit of both government and industry.
We've been talking to David Dowd, partner at Mayo Brown. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, WTOP FM HD2 Washington, WBQH Silver Spring.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune into In Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government, talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.